Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. It doesn't, you don't snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt
Peck.
What's
up, and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. So welcome back in after last night. All right, so if you didn't get to catch the game last night, or maybe you did watch it, the Bulls pull out another victory. This is now six in a row for the Chicago Bulls on a winning streak. They beat the Philadelphia 76ers last night at the United Center, 117-115. The 76ers playing without Joel Embiid and Lauri Markkanen returning for the first time in a couple of games. He was healthy. It was nice to see him back out there. And looking at the Bulls in general, Nico Mirotic coming off the bench with 22 points, 13 rebounds, kind of ignited the last stretch of this game, and where it looked like the 76ers had control at one point, and down in the last 4 minutes, the Bulls found a way to go on a 15-2 run and take this game from the 76ers. So, Matt, how are you, and what did you think about last night's win?
I am perplexed, Jordan. I guess that's the best word I can come up with right now, trying to figure out what exactly is going on here, as the Bulls have now, as you said, won six games in a row. I'm feeling perplexed and I'm feeling conflicted, because, and this is something we talked about on yesterday's show too, the 10-game losing streak was all about the failure to close out close winnable games and the failure to close out games where the Bulls are ahead. Now we're seeing the Bulls come back trailing in the fourth quarter and closing out games with wins, getting big plays again down the stretch from Nico Mirotic. And I'm conflicted, because it is great to see this young team so early in this rebuild starting to piece things together. And it's not just Nico. You know, it's partly a coincidence that this six-game winning streak has coincided with his return from injury, but it's also more and more improvements from Chris Dunn and role players like Bobby Portis and David Nwaba stepping up off the bench. It's all part of it. And so I'm encouraged by that. And at the same time, I'm sitting here thinking, like, crap, like, slow down. We need to lose. I know I said late last week that I'm not panicking about the tank tanking because the Bulls have scraped together some wins, but now all of a sudden, it's not a cute little 2 or 3 game winning streak. It's a 6 game winning streak. The Bulls are 9-20. This is not what they should be doing. They need to be gearing themselves towards a top 3 pick. So I'm perplexed and I'm conflicted, because it's nice to see them get these wins, but it is not helping their cause. And if I'm John Paxson right now, I'm saying to myself, hey, young player development, this is cool, but also maybe we should be tanking in the fourth quarter.
And that's what I'm with you too. I think a lot of Bulls fans out there will, at least the ones who want the Bulls to pick in the top 5 in the draft. And now it's just like, we're kind of sitting here like, I like seeing a lot. I like watching entertaining basketball, don't get me wrong. And I like seeing the Bulls win. But at the same time, like, this wasn't in the plans. And so a 6-game winning streak, while it is just 6 games, and there's still plenty of basketball left to be played, I think that's where we're starting to creep to the point now where we've got to start asking some questions. Like, do the Bulls need to start moving some of these guys? And I think the more games the Bulls win, the more pressure it's going to put on the front office to figure out what exactly they're going to do with this roster, and whether or not really they don't mind picking between 7 and 10, or if they do have the same emphasis that a lot of the fan base here wants them to be picking between the 1 through 5. I don't think we can completely eliminate that possibility out of the front office's mindset, is that if they are okay with seeing development from these players and end up falling between 7 and 10 in the draft. Like, that can't be a possibility that we just erase now that the Bulls have stacked wins together. And from everything that I've heard John Paxson say over the last couple of weeks, and even latest last night when he went on Sports Talk Live, it reminds me of thinking, okay, the Bulls are developing well, but at the same time, he's a little bit more cautious with the guys that we're thinking about the Bulls needing to move in order to continue to lose games. I mean, what do you think about the Bulls potentially having this situation where if they stack more than a 10 game winning streak together, you're talking about falling out of that contention, that lead, because teams stacked between 11 and 10 wins right now, there's like 5-6 teams at that point. And that makes that lottery kind of more congested, at least early on.
Well, I don't think we need to worry about a 10 game winning streak. I know I guaranteed a loss against Milwaukee and that didn't happen, but I mean, come on, we've got at Boston and at Cleveland coming up on the schedule.
That's true.
If the Bulls pull off wins in both of those, then like hell has frozen over. This is a cute winning streak and everything, but I'm sorry, no, they're not beating Cleveland. They're not beating LeBron and the Cavs in Cleveland. Not happening. I mean, as far as the predicament that Paxson finds himself in now, it's a tough spot to be in, because Paxson laid out the plan when the Bulls traded Butler on draft night last summer, and it was pretty evident. And he said, we're excited about adding multiple prospects to start this rebuild. And anytime you can get multiple young prospects in a trade for, you know, a player of Butler's caliber, that's a good thing. That's a win. And it's Dunn, and it's LaVine, and it's Markkanen. But also, Paxson said part of that plan is having a high lottery pick next summer, in the summer of 2018. Like, that's part of the plan. And I've tried to give the Bulls front office at least a little bit of credit in their decision to trade Butler and go in this new direction, because it is a clear plan, unlike what they'd been doing in recent years, where they say they want to get younger, more athletic, and then they sign Wade and Rondo and all that crap that we've gone over plenty of times. At least rebuilding and developing a young core is a plan, but a part of that plan, a very important part of that plan, is getting a top three pick in this upcoming draft. And there is a pretty big drop-off in this draft. The big talent is right there with those top three or four picks. Whether it's, you know, the bigs, DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley, or if it's the international star, Luka Doncic, Michael Porter, if it turns out his injury isn't too serious and he is looking healthy coming around to the draft. You want one of those four guys to throw into this rebuild. And if you keep winning games, I'm sorry, but you're going to end up picking in the teens again. And this draft in particular, they cannot have that. This is their best shot to get a high lottery pick before that draft reform comes in 2019. They cannot screw this up. So as far as making those moves, trade Rolo if you can. Nico's trade value is going from zero to something slightly above zero with his string of solid performances, averaging 20 and 7 boards. Great. Get him, talk him into getting traded to a contender. If a contender is interested, tell him a fresh change of scenery is what he needs and move him, because the Bulls should not be winning these games.
I look at the 76ers and it's kind of like looking at a team that has already been five years into a rebuild. And now you're starting to see some of these players come to fruition. I mean, they land Ben Simmons. Yeah, he was hurt for his rookie year. This is really his rookie year this season. You look at what he's turned into by, like, I was just amazed at seeing what he was able to do, how much bigger, how much stronger he got in just a year of being able to work out with an NBA team. Like, that's the type of player that the Bulls need to take this rebuild and accelerate it and turn it into something that the Bulls front office is hoping for, is that you turn this around in 3 years. That's why, like, when Paxson and Foreman talk about the getting a head start on the rebuild, which is like one of their favorite lines, I get that. Trading Jimmy Butler, you got three pieces instead of getting one piece in a lottery pick. I understand that. I get that. So if they want to turn this into something that can be even more accelerated, talking 2018 draft, you have to land a surefire thing. And drafting in between 7 and 10 with the team that you saw before Nico's return and before Zach LaVine even got on the floor, like, you've got to think about it in terms of that perspective. The larger sample size of the games that the Bulls have played already this season rather than the six games. So for the Bulls, they need to land a guy like Ben Simmons. That puts you in the opportunity to turn this around relatively quickly. You miss on a guy like that, you miss on an important draft in 2018 like the Bulls have here. You miss out on that, that could set your rebuild back 2, 3, 4 years. You don't even know. And that's why I'm saying even it's even more important with the draft being restructured and the opportunity of that happening after the 2018 draft. Like, that's all more important why the Bulls should be looking at this and saying, all right, if this continues, we got to start moving guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I mean, as far as the guys who are out there making those wins happen right now, you know, we know who Robin Lopez is. He's been the same guy since he came on board last season. And as far as Nico, like, use this. Use his non-zero trade value now. And it's cute that he was getting some Nico chance at the UC the other night. And it seems like Bulls fans have suddenly kind of, at least in a kitsch way, like, jumped onto the Nico bandwagon. The fact that Nico's 6-0, and every time the Bulls win, he puts up another, you know, picture of himself saying, you know, great team win. We're 4-0. We're 5-0. We're 6-0. It's all about Nico. And, like, I'm helping this team win. It's funny. You know, it's funny. A guy who got punched in the face, many of us thought he would never play a game in a Bulls jersey ever again, has been the catalyst for this winning streak. But if there are any Bulls fans out there who see this string of games that he's put together and think, you know what, maybe finally Nico has what he needed, which was just the correct offensive system and not playing behind a bunch of isolation guys and being solely a spot-up shooter. And he's added these new offensive weapons to his game. And maybe he's worth holding on to. Maybe paying him $12 million again next year isn't the worst thing in the world. I'm sorry, are you insane? Are you insane? Because we have no proof that this recent hot streak that Nico has will stay. There's no way in hell he finishes the season shooting 50% from three-point range. Or, you know, above 50% overall. No, it's not happening. He will regress. But in the meantime, if he's helping him win, would you rather have Nico Mirotić next season and a number 16 pick, or not Nico, whatever we get for him in a trade, and a top 3 pick? To me, that is a pretty clear A or B.
And that's my question here, is like, for the fans that like Nico Mirotić and want him to stay around, I pose the question is, how does he help the Bulls get to a point where they can sustain success in terms of competitiveness? Like, realistically, looking at building a championship contending team, how does a 26-year-old Nico Mirotić help you at this stage of the game? Like, he can help you get back to the playoffs if you want to be a 4-8 seed. Sure, Nico can help you do that in 2 years. 2 years from now, the Bulls, if they signed a couple veteran guys, they could be realistically a playoff team in 2 years. I get that, but how does that get you any closer to sustaining long, younger, more athletic players and sustaining that championship level success that you're trying to get back to? Not this mediocre hang out in the playoffs, not really get a draft pick, not really be that competitive or be that realistic for an NBA championship. That's my question to fans that, like, don't want the Bulls to give up on Nico and don't want the Bulls to trade him. So that's where I'm kind of conflicted with Bulls fans who want him. It's like, where does that get you any closer to a championship if you do continue to keep him here?
No, it doesn't. And I mean, Paxson said that when he was talking about why they made those moves, because they were stuck in the middle, and in the NBA, that's the last place you want to be. Just, you know, barely getting to the playoffs or just missing the playoffs and not getting the picks you need that are the high lottery picks to really, you know, and throw some fresh blood and some fresh young talent into your organization, because, look, even as he's turning 33 years old, LeBron James looks like a guy who is at the height of his game. You got this very good up-and-coming Boston Celtics team. The Bulls, yeah, they got a cute little six-game winning streak, but I'm sorry, this roster is not going to contend with them anytime soon in a best-of-seven series. Not happening. Not happening. So all those Bulls fans who were half-joking but half-seriously saying on Twitter, like, hey, we won six games. We're only, what, six and a half games out of the eighth seed? Maybe, you know, depending on the matchups, we'll see. You know, the Fred Hoiberg's teams always play those top-tier Eastern Conference teams really well. Sometimes they upset them. Shut your mouth. You are making the fan base sound stupid with that bullshit. It's asinine. That is not what the Bulls should be doing right now. Do not talk to me about, hey, we're only so-and-so games out of the eighth seed. No. John Paxson, and he is a smart man, said that that is not where they want to be, and that's why they made the Butler trade. So go along with that plan, and I know it's always more fun to win than it is to lose, and it's more fun to watch winning basketball than losing basketball. But if you can't stomach that, fine. That's fine. That's your choice. But you should be rooting for the Bulls to lose right now.
I believe
now.
Bulls fans, too, should think about where they could potentially be in 2 years. It's like if you really care this much about the Bulls being successful right now, it's going to ultimately hurt what you think about them in 2 years. Because if you want them to keep Nico around, you want them to keep Robin Lopez around, potentially try to fight for that eight seed, which is absolutely asinine and ridiculous to talk about. But since the topic is here, I'm going to give it 15 seconds. It makes no sense, and you'll only be more frustrated as a Bulls fan down the road, because once this lottery reconstruction hits, it doesn't play into the favor of a Bulls team trying to either tank if they're going full on tank, or a team that's being competitive. Like, it essentially rips the Bulls' opportunity to grabbing one of those franchise changing players. And like I said, you can get a player anywhere in the draft. It's about who you scout, how you scout them. And we've seen it before. Stars have turned out from all different places in the draft. But I'm saying, like, the most surefire thing is trying to get a guy in this top five. And this 2018 class is very special, too. It's one of the best drafting classes so far, at least early on, it looks like, that the NBA has seen in a while. And people have talked about the 2018 draft as being how loaded this draft can really be. So it's advantageous for the Bulls to stay in the top five. And like you said, I think the front office is smart enough to realize and kind of take a look around, but they also kind of want to bask in this a little bit. I mean, a team that's playing with high confidence, a team that looks like they're playing together, they're learning how to win games, they're learning how to win close games, and that's something we'll talk about at the end of the episode, kind of hitting on what John Paxson has said. But overall, one last hit on this game last night from the 76ers game. I was really impressed that the Bulls were able to string together a 15-2 run at the end, especially with 3 minutes left in the game. Like we had talked about, that was one of the hardest things to watch as a Bulls fan, especially in those first 20 games, was the Bulls' inability to close out games, to go on short runs, and to close out games against legit contenders and legit good teams. And so this was really fun to watch, and a team to be able to do this to a 76ers team who's younger, more athletic, and kind of trying to turn the corner here. I get it with a grain of salt because Joel Embiid didn't play last night, but certainly a great win again and a great closeout. It's weird to see the Bulls at this point from where we saw them against the Indiana Pacers, 10, 12 days ago on the road, and how badly that they blew that game. And I think that's been a turning point for this team. And for the young guys that are here, Chris Dunn, and Lowry Markkanen being around, Bobby Portis, David Nwaba, this is good for those guys in terms of learning how to close out games, learning how to win games close. But let's hope this doesn't continue for that
absolutely.
Long.
Absolutely. I am ready for a fresh losing streak. Hit me with it. We got the holidays coming up to pick everybody's spirits up. So it's fine. Like, we'll have plenty of things to distract us. Food, family, good drink. Use that to distract you, and hopefully the Bulls can stretch together another, you know, 7, 8, 9 game losing streak to get this tank back on track.
I'm really excited to see them play the Celtics and the Cavaliers, because this is kind of going to be like the test. This is the test to see really if what the Bulls are doing right now in this win streak is real, if it is competitive enough. I think that's where you're kind of going to get your answer. You're playing two teams that are super competitive. They've got everybody healthy there. Nobody's going to rest, and that'll be a hindrance to whether or not the Cavaliers and the Celtics decide to rest guys when they play the Bulls. But certainly will be interesting kind of as a test to see what this team really has and if this is legitimate or not. But let's get to our weekly segment here. So our weekly segment is Turn Back the Clock, looking at Bulls history and this week in Bulls history, taking a look at some games, some memories, some highlights from the Bulls history. What do you got for us today? And this is kind of our holiday version of this episode. So if you've got any of those Christmas Christmas games that you like too, Matt. Hit me with them. What do you got first?
Absolutely. Well, there's certainly a Christmas game I have in mind, but I'm going to start pretty far back, December 21, 1991. The Bulls, as defending champs, are out to a strong start. They beat the Atlanta Hawks on December 21st, 91. Final score 117-103. The Bulls moved to 20-4 on the season. And I picked this one because, and I'll throw up the highlights of this game on our Twitter feed. Some great video content here. Dominique Wilkins, 43 points for the Hawks, but it isn't enough as MJ and Scotty both drop 37 in the Bulls' win. MJ's stat line, 37 points on 16 of 24, 10 assists, 9 boards, and adding 4 steals. Scotty, 37 points and 6 rebounds, 3 steals, and 3 blocks. That is a hell of a stat line for that 1-2 punch of MJ and Scotty, outperforming a pretty dominant scoring evening from Dominique Wilkins.
So I'm gonna bring us a little bit closer to modern day here. So the one that I have is off of Christmas Day. It was actually the first game opening. It was basically opening night for the NBA after their lockout in 2011 when the Bulls took on the Los Angeles Lakers on the road.
I knew you were going to pick this one. This one was great. I mean, I still remember watching this game like it was yesterday. It was a great one.
Not only was the excitement of just the NBA being back, a lockout was really killer, and a lockout for any league is really killer, but this was kind of the anticipation. This was a really cool time because it was not only the holidays, but you were getting NBA basketball back. So the Bulls went on to take on the Lakers, and this was a close matchup. The Bulls pulled out an 88-87 victory, and if you don't remember, this is when Derrick Rose returned. He had a late-game clutch shot.
Hit that floater in the lane over Pau Gasol.
Oh, it was beautiful. He ended up scoring 22 in that game for the victory. Luol Deng actually had a really nice game, too. Defensively, he limited Kobe to 28 points on 23 shots and made Kobe turn the ball over 8 different times during that game. But this is one of my favorite memories just because of the story, the backstory of the NBA being in a lockout, not really sure understanding where the NBA would be if they were going to come back at all that season. Leading up to Christmas, giving NBA fans a little bit of a taste of a shortened regular season in 2011, but certainly one of my favorite games, and every time I think about holiday games, this is definitely one of the ones that I think of and go back and reminisce about.
Yeah, it was a great one, and as you mentioned, it was Rose hitting that clutch shot in the lane over, you know, a fully outstretched Pau Gasol. So, you know, that's a 7'1", you know, 7'1" guy with a crazy wingspan. Rose, much, much smaller than Pau Gasol, shooting that beautiful floater over him. But it was also a furious comeback. Like, I'm pretty sure the Bulls were down 87-81, and then with like less than a minute left, and score the final 7 points. You mentioned Luol Deng's defense on that night. He came up with a big steal late in that game that led to the ensuing go-ahead bucket there by Rose. Mike Tirico had a great call on that play and throughout the game. As you said, it was just a great memory because it was, you know, impatiently waiting for this NBA lockout to end, and finally you get the start of a brand new NBA season on Christmas Day. Two primetime markets, Chicago and LA, going to head to head. Kobe still in his prime, and the Bulls were coming off of a trip to the Eastern Conference Finals, so there was like that insane impatience among a rejuvenated, reinvigorated Bulls fan base that was so desperate to watch their MVP play, and yeah, that was a hell of a game.
I want to ask you one quick question, though, just kind of off topic. What do you think about the Christmas Day uniforms that the NBA has put out there the last few years?
I think it's cool that they do it. I think certain years they hit and they are really crisp and they are really nice. And then some years I look at them and I'm like, oh God, those are awful.
Like the ones with the logos like in the front.
Yeah.
They had the sleeves and the logos in the front.
Right. So the Bulls had a Christmas Day game. I can't remember when that was, 2012, 2013, maybe, when it was like the enlarged logo. So it was like the Bulls logo, but it was just a big enlarged version of the logo on the chest with no Bulls, no Chicago. And the sleeves, and I thought those were awful.
Yeah, those are brutal.
But there were a couple other ones. Like, I think it was maybe Bulls Thunder in a recent year Christmas game when they had kind of like a a Christmassy holiday kind of font, like that was different, and it was kind of like bulls in cursive across the front. I thought those were really sharp. So, like, I think it's cool that the NBA does a, you know, a Christmas Day special jersey for the teams to wear, and, you know, it's obviously more merch for them to sell. But as far as, you know, whether I like them or not, it varies year to year.
Yeah, I thought those, you brought up the 2015 jerseys when they played Oklahoma City. I really liked those jerseys too. I thought the crisp colors of the jerseys compare in, you look across the league, they did the same thing for across the league, but like just kind of that holiday font that they had on the jerseys and nothing else. I think when the NBA or even any league in general tries to do too much with their jerseys, it looks a little overdone. And it's like the less you do, the more crisp, the more clean it looks. I like those jerseys too. I can more specifically remember the Timberwolves jerseys, which were like all black. And then they had that like line, they had that like mint green lettering on it. Those were really nice too. So I don't know what they're going to plan on doing for Christmas this year with games in terms of what jerseys they're going to put out there, especially with Nike being their first year. So, but I would hope that maybe at least that they decide to do something, or maybe just maybe they start wearing their city jerseys around this time. That could be a possibility as well. But we will not be able to figure that out because the Bulls are not playing on Christmas Day.
I was
going to
say, if there's one thing we know about Christmas Day and Christmas night jerseys, Bulls, not relevant. They do not have a Christmas Day game because, as we know, the Bulls only have one nationally televised game this season, and it's against Minnesota. So, and it's I think it's later on in the season. Yeah, February 9th, home against Minnesota on ESPN. So, for a while there, it was like the Bulls were one of those, you know, interesting teams, relevant teams, and obviously a big market team. It was like they were playing Christmas Day games every year for that stretch of like the Thibodeau Rose years, but no longer.
So finally, to talk to wrap up the show, I want to talk about two quick things. So first, let's touch on what the Bulls did in terms of transactions this week. So they decided to waive Kay Felder. So that leaves a open roster spot on the NBA team. So that had me kind of interested. We talked about this. I think I threw this out there on last Friday's show yesterday, talking about Antonio Blakeney and possibly getting that role and being able to be signed. And we even had this discussion. We were talking about the possibility of the Bulls being interested in Derrick Jones Jr. And I said that maybe Blakeney will get signed to a real NBA contract, be a part of this Bulls team for real, and that'll open up some things for them to do with a two-way contract. But now that Kay Felder is kind of is waived, he won't be around. I'm interested to see what the Bulls did. I know you wrote something about this too as well. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the waiving of Kay Felder was kind of, you know, a long time coming. He really hasn't been in the picture for Hoiberg's rotation. Just 7 total minutes and 10 DNPs in his last 13 in the Bulls' last 13 games. So, I mean, he was a warm body and a guy who was interesting to watch at times earlier this season when the Bulls' roster was so thin and ravaged by various injuries. So they played him out of necessity, but at this point, what we heard from Fred Hoiberg at Tuesday's practice is that it's a move for flexibility, and he wouldn't necessarily say whether or not it means that they're going to offer a real contract to Blakeney, but it certainly seems possible. Like, I think the Bulls kind of have two options here. You know, Fred Hoiberg mentioned the flexibility. The Bulls could leave that roster spot open for some impending trades they might want to make for either Lopez or Mirotic and say, let's use that roster spot to bring on the player holding an unwanted contract from a trade partner, because that's something that the Bulls front office has repeatedly mentioned is cap flexibility. And they have the most cap room in the NBA right now, $15.9 million. So they could use that roster spot for that kind of reason to try and grab an asset like a draft pick along with taking on a bad contract. So the other option other than that one is signing Blakeney. And we've talked about how well he's done in his 5 games with the Windy City Bulls, averaging nearly 40 points a game, his true shooting percentage, 66 and change. I mean, he's dominating. So you kind of think, like, if he's that dominant in the G League, where he really belongs is, you know, in the big leagues, the real time, in the NBA. So at the same time, you kind of wonder, getting Levine back, you know, like, where would Blakeney fit into the rotation? Because it's not like he would come to the roster and then take Felder's minutes, because Felder's not getting any minutes. So, I mean, to me, it's those two clear-cut options. It's like, do you use that roster spot for, you know, a pre-deadline deal to, you know, to take on a bad contract with your cap space? Or do you offer him, Blakeney, a real deal? Because something else to be aware of is the fact that on his current two-way contract, he can only spend 45 days up with the Bulls, and he's already spent about half of those days up with the Bulls, and we're not even halfway through the season. So something to think about.
That was just kind of my point. To finish up, though, real quick, John Paxson went on Sports Talk Live on NBC Sports Chicago yesterday when they did Sports Talk Live from the United Center, and there was a couple things in his interview that I wanted to touch on real fast with you. I don't know if you got a chance to see that or not, but the one thing he had talked about this recent 6-game winning streak was pointing to a factor in how this might have happened. And obviously we talked about this too, and it's not really a surprise, but he said he pinpointed the loss at Indiana to be really that driving point. He said Fred was frustrated. He was upset that the way the team was playing, and that was kind of their driving force to be like, all right, are we continue to be a laughing embarrassment in the league, or we going to turn things around? And they did decide to turn, they ended up turning things around, and they got Nico Mirotić back right after that end of the game. And that was sort of their spark, and he pointed that to that as well. So Nico's played really well over the course of these 6 games, and he's really been that confidence boost that this Bulls team desperately needed. One other thing, too, I want to throw this at your way, Matt. He revealed that Levine has been checking the boxes in terms of physical, athleticism, everything he has had. But he said that there was a slight setback in terms of he was dealing with back spasms. He said it's not really that big of a deal. He said we're just going to be really cautious with him. That's kind of why he's been pushed back. And we'll take a look at him at the beginning of January, and hopefully he can string together a couple of significant practices. But it will ultimately be a lot of decisions in terms of the way that they utilize Levine when he comes back. Do you think this is more so him just kind of wanting to be absolutely 100% sure that he's healthy and he can sustain his health before they start to put him in that starting lineup and give him legit minutes every night?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a couple of things. I think first and foremost, you are not going to take any unnecessary risks with a guy who was supposed to be the centerpiece of your young rebuilding team moving forward. Markkanen and Dunn are both looking great. They both look like valuable pieces of that trade. But Levine is the biggie, because this guy, he's been in the league a couple of years. He's shown flashes of being a star potential player. And you do not want to risk anything with a guy coming back from an ACL. And that's even, you know, I feel like most Bulls fans can understand and appreciate that. Even those who were so hot for Rose to play, when Rose was coming back from his first ACL tear, saying, oh my God, I can't believe he's not going to come back and play in this playoff series against Brooklyn. Like, he's been medically cleared. Why won't he play? Even those fans who were that impatient about Rose, I think, should have the logic and reason to say, this is a tanking year. The Bulls aren't gunning for a playoff spot. Again, reminder, the Bulls are not gunning for a playoff spot. So you shouldn't rush this guy back if he's that important to your rebuild. There's also, you know, I said there's a couple of things here. The second thing would be maybe Paxson is looking at this little 6-game winning streak and saying, oh, crap. Well, this is nice and everything, but I wasn't really planning on that. Maybe we're going to be extra super duper careful with the return of Zach LaVine, because when Zach LaVine comes back, the Bulls, you know, assuming LaVine comes back and is a positive impact, has a positive impact on the floor, it's only going to increase the odds of the Bulls winning on any given night. And Paxson doesn't want that. He wants a lottery pick. So I think between those two factors, I would not be surprised to see them continue to push back his return.
I think it also brings up a good question, too, here is like, okay, if you want to be hesitant with what you're doing, you know, maybe there is some financial implications, too, to think about in terms of what they would have to do at the end of the season. He's a restricted free agent, so maybe you push that timeline back and you only get a little bit of a sample, and maybe he's thinking, hey, if it can help us save a dollar whatever, they can use that as a factor too of only being able to see him for 2 months.
Meaning like if other potential suitors don't get as much of a look at LaVine, he won't be as likely to get big offers from elsewhere that the Bulls would have to
Absolutely.
Match. Is that what you're saying?
And I know he's still going to be driving.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can see the
logic.
And
he's still
going to
be driving
that, yeah.
He's still going to be driving huge money. And it's not like the Bulls would be like fleecing anybody or getting this outrageous deal. But I mean, that could have a small part in it too. I think another thing for the Bulls to think about too in that same factor is you're not getting as many games to look at him too. And what the Bulls have talked about too, and John Paxson said this specifically, is he said they don't really know what they're going to do with him when he does decide to put him back out on the floor, is if he's going to play significant minutes. How many minutes is he going to play a night? Is he going to play in back-to-back games? Those are all things that they still need to work out and figure out, and I think that's going to come with seeing how LaVine reacts to NBA play again and how he incorporates himself back into the game in like real live game situations. But I thought that was interesting. One last note, Vincent Goodwill asked a really good question to John Paxson. I thought this was kind of important for people to reestablish what the roles are in the front office. And so he asked him, he's like, what's your role in terms of coming out here and speaking more and being more public? Even over the last year, and he talked about that in the summer, that he was going to have more of a role talking to the media and talking with people. And Gar Forman has kind of stepped down from that role a little bit. And I think he said one of the things that he really wants to do is be out in front of this and defining the direction, answering the questions from reporters and being that face and being that guy that's pushing through these guys. He said Gar Forman is now sort of dealing with the player agents, doing the day-to-day behind-the-scenes stuff, which he said he's really great at, which we talked about too. It's like Gar Forman wasn't the greatest public speaker, and everybody can say that too, and he wasn't the best at answering questions with the media. So I think in terms of trying to change what the Bulls look like in the ultimate culture, what they have talked about, I think this is an important piece too, is like you need a guy out there that's going to answer the questions and a friendly face in like someone like John Paxson, not like an idiot like Gar Forman, who's going to go out there and tell you campaign is the greatest thing that they've ever got.
Yeah, I think Paxson is very aware of the perception of Gar Forman in Chicago. And I think, you know, Paxson has said, like, you know, he's addressed the whole Gar Pax as one entity thing. And he doesn't like it. And without throwing Gar Forman under the bus, and he constantly says, you know, Gar is great at handling that day to day and the business side and dealing with agents. And I have no interest in talking to agents. I'm not good at it. That's where Gar shines. And, you know, he's as a scout, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we can choose to believe or not, you know, that Gar Forman is some genius scout of talent. Personally, no, don't think so. But it makes perfect sense. This is still a guy who has 100% trust and loyalty from Jerry and the entire Reinsdorf family, and he's the guy who should be out there fielding questions from a skeptical media, from a skeptical fan base, because, as you said, that has never been something Gar is good at. So, yeah, if Gar never shows himself at a press conference ever again, there would be a little piece of me that's sad because I love to make fun of the stupid shit that he says. But from the Bulls front office perspective, it makes sense. It's logical to have Paxson be that guy.
Obviously feel he can be a real asset to us. We think he's a value pick, but we did want to get younger and we do want to get more athletic.
He also said that like he wants to be the guy that's traveling with the team and going on more road trips, being able to be a supportive piece from the front office's standpoint for players when they do start to struggle, and just knowing that the players, in terms of the front office, that the front office has the players back. So I thought that was kind of key. I mean, whether or not that's just BS and it's just whatever, it's just smoke, and he's just saying that or he's being legitimate about that. But I think in a way to change this culture that the Bulls have and the way that the front office is perceived in Chicago, you got to start somewhere. And if it's Paxson coming out and being being that face and talking more and being more open with things that are going on in Chicago and being sort of that guy that delivers the message to everybody, I mean, you can't get any worse than Gar Forman. That'll be my thing here. So I thought he did have a couple other points, but they weren't really anything out of the normal. They weren't anything that you haven't already heard from him.
Yeah, Pax loves to repeat himself, doesn't he?
Yeah, so I thought those were two interesting things, though. He said things about Zach LaVine, and then a question of kind of what his role is and how it has changed in rebuilding. One last note, though, real quick, is it does sound a little bit more like Robin Lopez is going to be staying around here. Just to let you guys know that.
That's what I was telling you, man. Just based on the things I've heard and the way that they look at him as a value to this team, they might be taking calls. I don't know if they'll be making calls about Robin Lopez. They will, as always, answer the phone and hear any inquiries. And if they get an offer for Lopez that's too good to pass up when it comes to adding assets for this rebuild, I think they still will do it. But I think they'd rather keep him. I think it's becoming more and more clear that they want him around to be that veteran leader for this Bulls team right now.
Yeah, he said that they value highly veterans that can come in here and support a team that is trying to rebuild with these young guys. And Robin Lopez was the first name out of his mouth. And he said, you know, he hasn't been that vocal of a guy, but he said that guys in the locker room love him, and that's obvious. And so he said, we're obviously going to do what's best for our organization going on into the future. So if things do arise, but more and more, just the tone and the way it sounds, it's like the Bulls aren't going out there and trying to find anything possible to get for Robin Lopez. So if I had to place bets on it, I would say it's more likely that Robin Lopez stays with the Bulls than he does leave, unless the Bulls get wowed by something coming into it.
Which is fine. You know, don't waste your time and energy trying to find a trade partner for Robin Lopez. How about instead focus on finding a trade partner for Nico Mirotic? For the love of God.
Steve and some of you guys, I've been thinking that you guys thought I was joking, but I was not joking. Very, very serious.
Well, that's good about doing here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Anywhere you find podcasts, you're going to find us. That's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play. Literally anywhere you find podcasts, you will be able to listen to us. I'm so glad you guys joined us today. We'll be back with a fresh episode tomorrow for you. But in the meantime, remember, go follow us on social media. Go like us. Remember, we are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, 3 times a week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Send in all your mailbag questions to us. Tomorrow, we'll be answering all these questions that you guys have. Maybe you've got some comments, concerns, questions, whatever it is, send it to us via social media, Facebook, Twitter, or email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. But for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great night. We will see you tomorrow.